I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you, on my rocking bicycle. And welcome to Out There. It is Friday. Let me turn the mic up a little bit. Mistakes, that means I'm live in the studio. It's Friday, November. It is Friday, right? Yeah, Friday, November 4th. I'm live in the studio. I was gone in October to Kentucky. For today's show, I have a live guest coming. She's very close. She had to stop at Masa Mexicana and get a snack. Oh, here she is. She's walking into the studio now. Nevla Naji. But here's a word from now, a short word from my friend now. This is only like a 2-minute clip while Nevlin and I get a little settled. Friday, the 23rd of September, 2022. Things I've seen this week. Today, I'm looking at puffballs along Route 5 by the Oxbow. Puffballs that have puffed their top off. They look like almost like ashtrays, like a little saucer full of brownish, reddish, grayish puff smoke. Also, autumn olives are just coming ripe. And I've been collecting walnuts and pears, and European pears and Asian pears. European pears just known as pears here and in Europe, and the Asian pears just known as pears in Asia. And don't ask my pawpaw source, it's kind of a secret. But if you ask me for a pawpaw, I'm very happy to share. So now and I hiked to the top of the Mount Nonatuck part of Mount Tom, and then we climbed off the tower. I don't know, this is a fire tower. What kind of tower this is? How's the view now?
Oh, fantastic.
So we're really high up. You can see like New Hampshire in one direction. You can see Connecticut in the other direction. You can see Massachusetts all around. Well, not to designate things by their political divisions, but trees. You can see trees and mountains and a long ways, and it's a long ways down. And what's the sign? What's the sticker? Someone put up a sticker on the railing at the top of the tower. What's the sticker say?
No diving.
All right, that was my friend now and me on a hike back in September. Nevlin is live in the studio on mic 2. Let me get mic 2. Nevlin, are you there?
Hi.
Oh, can you say that again?
Hey.
Uh-oh. I don't.
You don't.
No, can you put your face a little closer to the mic?
Hey there.
Oh, something's wrong. How about mic, you want to try mic 4? Oh, it's mic 3. I have the wrong button. That's what happens when I don't come into the studio for like 5 weeks. I'm like, how does this thing work?
Yeah.
I need to train for a whole nother year.
I know, you were talking about that. It's all good.
Oh, hang on. Sorry, I forgot to move the slide. We hear you.
Yay.
Thanks for coming in, Nevlin.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Nevlin and I are going to talk about lots of things. First of all, though, how did we meet? Do you recall?
Yes, I do. I went to one of your bike workshops Northern Avenue?
Yeah, can you get a little bit closer?
Yeah. I went to one of your bike workshops in the wintertime. It was like, I just remember it was a super, super cold, sunny day.
Yes.
And we were freezing outside. And I think I was asking you about like changing out my brake pads. Was it the brake pads? Fenders.
Yeah. It was November of last year with winter coming on, right? I think.
No, it must have been like December because it was super cold.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, and that's where we met. And you were like super kind and helpful. And I was like, whoa, like I've heard of pedal people and pass by your house, but I had no idea that you do these workshops. And like as a, you know, like I was, that was the first winter that I was becoming like a full-time bike commuter. So I really needed to have that education.
Yeah. And you're like commuting from the suburbs of Florence. So that's like, that's a whole different ball game from where you commute, having to deal with Florence Road, Burt's Pit Road, winter nights.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I honestly call it like rural suburban. Mm-hmm. It's not like a proper suburb. Like we have bears and a bear like knocked over our trash can yesterday. So it's a whole different thing. And the roads are not like made for biking at all. Like they didn't even think about us. So
we have so many things we can talk about today. We can talk about your memoir, we can talk about your art, dancing, your cat sitting business. Hopefully we'll get to many of those things. But
so many things. So many things.
But to warm myself up a little bit more, because I'm still a little jitterish.
Yeah.
Jitterish?
Yeah.
We've
been, I mean, it's your first time back in a while, and like we were running all over the place before this.
We were working on Nevelyn's e-bike and working on just trying to, you know, you take a bike apart and then you're like, I got to get this back together so I can get to where, to like, the studio or to get some. Oh no, I'm out of food. I need to get something to eat or else I won't be able to think straight. Well, part of my problem is that I was out doing pedal people earlier today and just biking around and out for, you know, since like 7:30 or 8:30 this morning. And then I'm on my way back home like at 2, whenever it was. I'm coming up State Street. I'm biking up State Street and there's this free pile. Someone had put a bunch of their pantry things out. And I was a little thirsty because I got separated from my water bottle. I was actually really thirsty. And I got separated from my water bottle. And then in this free pile, I see a coconut water. I love coconut water. I got so excited. I'm like, I'm going to guzzle that whole thing right now. So I'm standing there on State Street and I pop the top and I start drinking. I'm like, what? This is like super sweet and tastes like coffee. And then I look and it says espresso coconut water.
Yeah. No, when Ruthie showed me that, I was like, ew, gross. I'm so sorry. Like, that is just blasphemous what they did with that. I'm so like, it's like hurt my feelings.
But the thing is, I was so thirsty. I kept drinking it, but I was like, oh no, I know this is going to affect my brain. And then I'm going to have to try to focus with Nevelyn working on her bike and then try and focus for my radio show while I got like a 16 ounce can of espresso coconut water working its way through my body.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that, like that kind of making you jittery. Yeah. Well, oh my gosh.
Anyway, let's talk about you. do you mind if I ask you on air why you're trying to fix up your bike here, like a little history of your biking situation?
Yeah, sure. I'll put somebody on blast here. So a man hit me while I was on my bike. Somebody hit me when I was on my bike. A driver hit me at an intersection that was actually really close to where I lived, where I had never once, well, actually there was one time where I felt unsafe, but yeah, I never really had any problems there. It was a clear as beautiful day like today, like sunny mid-afternoon. I was following like all the rules at the intersection. There were other people there who saw me, and this man, like, he didn't like, he claimed that he didn't see me. He didn't let me like take my turn at the intersection. And he was just going. And the only thing that notified him of my presence was that crash. Oh, so my bike got totaled. I didn't, you know. I did have some injuries, but yeah, my bike got destroyed and I'm just like trying to get things back together again. Yeah. So
this was the four-way stop on the corner of Ryan Road and Burt's Pit.
Ryan Road.
Or sorry, I'm not Florence.
Florence Road, which is a dangerous road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
very kind of narrow and high speed with people trying to get from Florence to East Hampton as fast as possible.
I do not like Florence. I don't want to say I hate Florence Road because it's useful, but I bought my helmet specifically for Florence Road, and I'm so glad I wore it that day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, your bike ended up under the car and you ended up on top of the car?
Yep. Yep. I mean, I mean, eyewitnesses say that I like rolled on top of the car and like I landed on the ground, on the pavement. And then like I looked up and I saw my pedals like scattered, and I just like started crying. Like I was in total shock. It was so distressing. But you know the medics and you know the people who are around were super helpful, and everyone was really nice to me, so that kind of like warmed my heart. And like that's just been carrying on. I've been getting like a lot of community support since that, like around like getting rides when I've needed it, like, you know, because I can't ride like due to either the injury or just like my bike not being fully functional yet. Even Ruthie gave me a ride actually like 2 weeks afterwards before I got this new bike, like and put me in the back of the trailer. Yeah, like where the trash usually sits, and it was so fun. So I got a ride back to like the pedal people co-op, and that was like really cool. So
well, I'm so sorry this happened to you, because these things, like, they, you know, they rattle you, they affect you for a long time.
Oh yeah, definitely still affect. I mean, I think that I was like, okay, like I didn't die, you know, like, okay, it's cool. But like now I'm seeing like that there was like a lot of effects. So
yeah,
but I'm grateful that, you know, I survived. Yeah. And 'cause I'm really lucky that I did.
Yeah. Probably like being fit and healthy, like sped your recovery time and decreased the amount that your body got smashed up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still recovering, but, you know, I think that, yeah, like, just, it always helps to be healthy and, you know, to be eating well, eating your vegetables and
and riding your bike.
Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that you had mentioned, so I know you stay in shape by riding your bike, stay fit, but you also do some dancing.
I'm a pole dancer, so I've been pole dancing just for creative purposes for like since 2013, so like almost 10 years now. I have like taken some breaks from pole dancing. I'm on a break right now, just because I don't have my pole set up. And like, you know, I'm also like working with my body in other ways, but yeah, like I've been like on my movement journey for a long time, and, I reached a professional level. So like, I'm a certified instructor, I've performed, there's just been a whole journey with pole dancing. And, that's like a part of like what I wrote about in my memoir. Initially it was, you know, gonna just talk about that journey alone as a pole dancer, but it actually, the more that I wrote, I was like, oh yeah, and this happened around that time that I was taking the class, and this happened, and it just kind of unfolded into like this whole like very holistic story about my life as a woman, as an artist, and my healing journey, everything that I went through around that whole artistic journey. So
Do you want to share like why you became interested in pole dancing, or like how did you learn to pole dance?
Yeah. I was living in Brooklyn at the time. I had just finished my documentary. So I have a background in film. I made a documentary on Black women and civil rights movement. It's called Reflections Unheard, Black Women and Civil Rights. I had just published that. And I had like been coming from like a whole, I guess, yeah, like several years of like doing, you know, film stuff. Like it's completely different, like film editing and like sitting at the computer and kind of like more intellectual stuff. And then I saw this video, like a YouTube video of this beautiful pole dancer, you know, in Los Angeles, who, by the way, I later met. And I was like, whoa, how is she doing that? And she's wearing heels. And like, you know, it was like so amazing. And she just, it looked like it was such an amazing discipline. I could tell that it was like a lot of hard work for her to do these things so effortlessly. And it fascinated me. And then it was edgy, you know, because mm-hmm. it's like, it was still like very, and still is to some degree, it's like very stigmatized back then. Like I got a lot of flack when I first started. Mm-hmm. And so I was just, actually my ex-partner, like my then partner, challenged me and was like, hey, would you ever like do pole dancing? Like just a random question out of nowhere. I didn't even say anything that I had seen this video like prior to. And I was like, yeah, I think I would. And so it just started from there. I like went home, bought a pole on Amazon, started stretching with YouTube tutorials, tried to learn myself, couldn't do it. It was harder than it looked. You can't, like, I took a class in Manhattan and then it just kind of like went on from there. And I took it seriously from the very beginning. So
how did you start getting professional gigs?
That journey, it was like, that's a lot of what I wrote about, because I, you know, just being who I am, navigating that industry, like the pole dancing industry, which is a baby industry. It's very niche as it is. And it's also like a baby industry. It's like kind of new. It's like mostly like women owned businesses too. So like going and like trying to break into the professional pole world through like competitions and pole dancing studios, like getting opportunity as an instructor, there's like a whole like system around that. And I'll be honest, like it was hard. And I dealt with a lot of rejection that I felt like was so unwarranted, because I knew I was talented, I knew I was skilled, but I didn't understand why I didn't really fit into these different studio cultures or why I wasn't feeling seen. And that's a lot of what inspired me to write about my journey as a pole dancer, because I felt like I wanted to like make, I could tell people I'm a pole dancer and they'd be like, they look at my stuff and they'd be like, wow, that's really cool. But they don't know like what I had to do to even be able to do that. And that my personal journey, because of the setbacks that I faced, whether it was like financially or socially or, you know, all of those things, like that impacted, like my journey is probably not going to look like the average dancer's journey who may have had like different advantages or privileges. So that's also, I wanted to like humanize the journey and make it understandable for the layperson, basically, who's not a pole dancer and who can like relate to different aspects of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you ever think about like just like giving up with all the setbacks and stuff?
I mean, yeah, there were moments of frustration. I have had to take like breaks from pole dancing just because, you know, the thing that a lot of people may not know is that like I personally would consider pole dancing to be a high art because it's very expensive. It's like, you know, like some art forms are like, you know, like skiing or, you know, like, you know, snowboarding or whatever, like, you know, you see, you have to, there's so much that goes into like, you have to get the equipment and then you have to have a certain setup and you have to get to the snow and whatever. Pole dancing is similar to that because mm-hmm. like, if you want to train at a really high level, you're essentially like wanting to become a professional gymnast / ballet dancer mm-hmm. or circus artist of some sort. And there's like, you can't, you know, you can't just do it willy-nilly. Like, you could. I mean, you could just, I mean, everyone's journey is different. You could just do it at home for your own self-care. And that is beautiful. And I do that too. But like, if you want to reach a very high level with your skill, like, you have to train for it and you have to do it properly and you have to get like the education. And so where was I going
I was
with this? Did I ever think of giving up? Yeah. I had to take breaks because of like the setbacks, whether it was like lack of space, lack of studio space, like, you know, being excluded from certain studios, financial setbacks, moving around, like, and that's also like why I wrote about it too. Like, I just wanted to like get it all out there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I never really like gave up. Like, yeah, I'm giving up. Like, I always found like my window. Like, I always found like that window where I could like, you know, reinvent the wheel, like reinvent the way that, and what I found is that, like, I have to find my own path. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to carve it out myself. It's not something that I can like expect to like get to my goals and dreams through like following what other people have laid out that wasn't made with me in mind.
Yeah. So you mentioned your memoir. Can you just like tell us the title of that? And
The memoir name is Nevlin, My Path to Healing and Creative Liberation. And Nevlin is spelled differently than my legal name. It's spelled N3VLYNNN. So that's my artist name. That's also like my stage name. And yeah, that's like the name of like my website and like all the different things around, you know, my multidisciplinary arts. However, I will say with that the memoir that I wrote is, you know, it's very intimate and I really didn't hold anything back. It's 542 pages. Mm-hmm. So it's a big kahuna book. Like, it's like a tome. And I wanted to make sure that it reaches the audience that I want to reach, and I want to reach women, and specifically women who I feel would resonate most and benefit from reading my story. Cause I really like shared a lot. And so what I did was I made it available on request through my website. So not just anyone can go and buy it. Mm-hmm. I make it so that you have to like fill out a little form, and then I can decide like if I feel comfortable sharing it. Uh-huh. And offering like the purchase link.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, most people, I feel like when they write a book, they want to sell as many copies as possible and have as many people read it as possible.
I know. And I had to like really listen to my spirit, because like this book came through me from like spirit. Like it just like poured out of me. And it's very deep, and it's really interesting too, you know, and so I've heard from my readers. But I felt like I wanted to create a safe space for myself, because it is a gift. It's really wonderful that I have the ability to be vulnerable, but I've learned over the years that I need to also like learn to protect myself and keep myself safe. I deserve that for all that I'm giving. So that was one of my ways that I did that.
Yeah. I mean, it seems really scary to me to write something personal and then just put it out there.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think that I was kind of, I did have moments of feeling like exposed to a degree, you know, like, oh my goodness, I shared this with, you know, this person. But like, you know, I've like sold out of the initial like stock of copies that I had, and I have to restock. And I'm like, okay, well, that was like the first like, you know, couple dozen people, and I'm happy with that. It you know, and this is, yeah, like this is just like my journey continuing. I feel better now that I have made it, you know, a safer space for me as far as like people being able to purchase. Because people even, I didn't put it on Amazon or any of those websites. I just put it on my website. So that was one thing. Mm-hmm. But to have that extra layer, I was like, okay, now I feel better. I feel like this is more intimate. I want an intimate audience, even if I reach a lot of people in the end, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. What about like financial pressures to sell books? I mean, because it takes a lot of time to write a book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have earned back a lot of, I haven't done the exact numbers, but I, you know, just through like the book sales, I've earned back like a significant portion of what I invested, at least I've earned back what I put into like just having to have the books produced yeah. and put on like print on demand. But, and all the tools that I had to invest in to like write it, like, you know, my softwares and stuff, like that's all like stuff that I can still use to produce more stuff. So it's like an investment, yeah. But I told myself like, I don't ever want, there's certain things that I do that I don't ever want to, have to rely on like a marketplace to sustain me completely. And my book is one of those mm-hmm. things. It's very sacred. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, even my performance art is the same thing. I don't ever want to have to rely on pushing my body and like churning out performance or choreography to make money, you know, that I don't want to pimp my gifts like that. Like yeah. I want to really respect what I have. Maybe I can do that with other things that, you know, are more aligned with, you know, turning stuff out, but not this.
Like your cat sitting business.
Just slide it in there.
All right. If you just tuned in.
Commercial break.
yeah, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Nevela Naji is my live guest here in the studio. I'm Ruthie Woodring. This is WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. We'll come back for more with Nevlin. Yeah, maybe we'll talk about your cat sitting business. We gotta talk a little bit more about your film, Reflections Unheard, Black Women and Civil Rights, and other stuff.
Thank you.
you're listening to out there on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Live in the studio today with me is Nevlin Nagy, fellow cyclists around Florence and stuff. Also, as we were talking before the break, Nevlin was talking about her memoir, My Path to Healing and Creative Liberation, and her and pole dancing and stuff like that. My niece wanted to be a pole dancer. She's 16 right now.
Really?
And yeah, she wanted to be a pole dancer. Her dad, my brother's like, no.
Why?
It's like that stigma thing,
yeah,
that you say, because I think people don't really know exactly what it is or what it means or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But wait. Well, all right. Yeah. And I was like, why is it so expensive? Like, I don't know anything about it. Can't you just get a pole and dance around it?
You can. Oh, absolutely. 100%. Like, I speak from my own experience of like what my path was with it and what I wanted to do with it. But of course you can. Like, plenty of women just get a home pole. I trained mostly at home as well. I always like to have a pole at home just for my own personal use. To practice with or to dance on whenever I want. Yeah. Plenty of women just have a pole at home and they just have fun with it, you know, as a exercise or creative.
Yeah, poles are fun.
Yeah, totally.
So let's talk about cat nanny love. I just looked up your new website during the break. And you said you just got this online like last night?
This morning, technically, at 5 a.m.
Oh, wow.
I started working on it, let me dabble in this a little bit. And then I just, like, went ham, like, from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. I was working on this, and I was a happy chappy. It was so much fun. I don't know how I did that.
Wow. There's a very, very cute cat on the page, on the homepage. Cat Nanny Love in Home TLC for your precious kitty. Is that in Florence, Northampton? How far do you go to provide some cat nanny love?
Cat. Okay, so I, as far as like in the Pioneer Valley, so what I do is I do in-home cat sitting. And I do like live-in cat sitting. So I will go and stay overnight at, you know, a host's home while they're on vacation or while everyone's on their travels. And I will take care of your cat as a full-time sitter. And because I work from home, you know, they have me for at least half of the day, unlimited cuddles, like all the pet care services that cats need normally. And yeah, I love cats. I as far as, you know, where I do it here, within the Pioneer Valley, it's within the Northampton metropolitan area. And I am very specific about this because I've gotten so many requests. So just to be clear, I am not going to Belchertown or those remote hill towns. It needs to be within like a biking distance from me or a bikeable area that's close to a downtown.
Cool. And I can give as much reference as I can. Well, let me say that when Nevlin came to my house recently and my housemate's cat, who I hadn't even gotten to pet yet, you walked into my house and that cat let you pet her.
Really? I think I remember that. That was like a couple of months ago. Yeah. They know that I'm a cat mama. They can sense it. They might even smell cats on me because I live with a cat. I live with, you know, my family's cat and I'm always loving on him. So yeah. Who knows? Cool. They know.
Here's a reference that says, I wish we could give Nevlin 10 billion stars.
Did you see that one? Oh, yes. Yeah. That's on the homepage.
Yeah.
That was my first review. So, it wasn't my first review, but I had also joined a website called Trusted House Sitters earlier this year as a way to travel as a pet sitter. So that was the second part of the question. I also travel as a cat sitter, but I do a lot of those travel sits, or at least I start off that way through this website called Trusted House Sitters, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I also do it professionally in my local community. And it's a service. I call it like a holistic exchange, because to me, it's not just about the money. I was cat sitting even before I was ever paid for it, just because I love cats. Mm-hmm. And then because I love cats and traveling. But I've always like only specialized in cats. You know, I don't do doggy care. I get this. I know Ruthie's laughing. I don't do dogs. Like, I get so many requests for dogs, and I just have to like bring it home. Like, I am specializing in cats. This is like my heart and soul, and this is like a heart offering. And I also really care about the homes where I'm staying, right? I want it to feel like a sanctuary for me as well. So I talk about all of that, and you know, my intentions for what I share and my offering on the website. And I just had a blast writing. You know, I'm a writer, so I just had a You can feel the emotion coming off the page. It's just, I really love cats so much, and I love doing this, and it's brought so much bounty into my life, and I'm happy to share it with this community.
So when you're cat sitting, like you're doing in-home cat sitting, and you're there cuddling with a cat, or you're doing your work from home stuff, what kind of work from home stuff are you doing?
Oh, yes. Well, I have been for the past few years distributing my documentary, Reflections on Heard Black Women and Civil Rights, to academic libraries, so to universities, sometimes to nonprofits and collectives, but you know, mostly to universities. That's a lot of what I do. Sometimes I also do other artistic work, you know. And I'm also starting, and this is something I didn't, this is why I said I do so many things, Ruthie. I often don't even really remember. But I'm currently also launching a virtual assistant business where I provide remote support, administrative support, and creative services to entrepreneurs. And I'm opening that up soon. I'm just working on launching that and getting that started. So, but that's also a lot of what I work on, is that particular project, at least right now.
So I want to get to Reflections Unheard in a minute, but if people are trying to get a hold of you, like, there's so many different ways, right?
I know.
I mean, my preferred way would just be to find you riding your bike around town.
Exactly. Like, you know, but I mean, I think that because I have so many different offerings, I think that it just depends on, you know, what exactly somebody wants to engage in, because it really runs a whole spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of my cat sitting clients are lovely, but they may not be like the audience for like my memoir or, you know, so I just try to leave it up to people and talk to them, mm-hmm. and give out the information that I think that they're asking for, I hope that you guys out there are writing these things down.
So Reflections Unheard, that came out in 2013, right?
Yes. So Reflections Unheard, Black Women and Civil Rights. By the way, if anybody wanted to watch that just for free, it is available at the Forbes Library. You can, it's on DVD at the Forbes Library. It's also at Smith College Nielsen Library has it on DVD and as a digital. Ruthie's impressed.
That's great to know.
Yeah, a lot of like the Five College Consortium has it. It's really like in pretty much like every major university in the Anglophone world at this point. So I definitely made sure of that, because that was my bread and butter for so long. So So yeah, it's available in the community, and a lot of spaces have it. I would love to do another screening in the area next year, especially you know, before I move on to my next city. So maybe that'll happen too. I'll hit up the Center for the Arts or Smith or wherever.
Yeah. So how did you decide to do that film?
Oh Lord. You are going way back in time. That was like 12 years ago. So like the film, okay, so the film came from me really exploring feminism, like Black feminism, as a young woman, trying to make sense of my own experiences that I'd been having, making sense of, you know, some of the oppression that I had faced as well, that I, you know, I didn't really have any reference point for. And I started getting into reading different feminist authors, like, you know, bell hooks was one. I went on a forum one day, like a Black women's community forum one day, and I you know, I saw this woman talking about, oh yeah, and the Black Panthers were terrible to those women. And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, you know, Elaine Brown talked about it. Elaine Brown is a former Black Panther, and she wrote a memoir called A Taste of Power. And she talked about a lot of the abuses that many Black Panther women faced, and the marginalization that they face in, like, the political, you know, I guess what they were fighting for. I don't want to just call it ideology, because it was so much more real than that. But and I read that and I was like, whoa, it blew my mind, because I never knew, like, I wasn't taught these things. You know, in school we learn about Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks, and like, oh my God, it was civil rights, was this big, you know, homogenous thing that was so revolutionary for everyone. And, you know, it was for everyone's freedom. And it was, like, you know, idealistically, but that's not really how things played out. So, you know, I started researching this, and at first the film was not going to be about the civil rights movement. It was going to be about just Black women's experiences in America, why we face this discrimination, this unique sort of cross-section of discrimination that we do based on race and gender. And the history was going to be like a segment of it. And I started interviewing, like, lots of professors and stuff. And then I realized, like, just through my research, that, like, the civil rights radical movements was the perfect time. All of these things were being televised and documented. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if I just focus on this period and highlight this, I can tell the story that I want to tell and highlight these different elements that I want to hit on just as a part of it. So if that makes sense. So like the film focuses on the marginalization, like Black women's marginalization between the male-centered Black Power movement and the white middle-class feminist movement of the 60s and 70s. And it's like half interviews between, like, of different various Black women who are part of various organizations. I interviewed former Black Panthers, former SNCC members, who, by the way, the SNCC members were the people who did the sit-ins at the, you know, at the lunch counters, for people who may not recognize the name. National Black Feminist Organization, which is a lesser known organization, Third World Women's Alliance, you know, these sorts of organizations. I interviewed those women, got them in the film, and I also have a lot of archival footage. So it's about half and half interspersed. And yeah, it's a feature length film. It's 81 minutes.
Yeah. Like, congratulations. Like, how old, can I ask how old you were when you did that? That was like your...
I was 22.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm an old soul. I'm a very old soul. I feel like that was just God, like, you know, saying, hey, you're gonna be the one to give birth to this. Uh-huh. I hated history growing up. Uh-huh. I hated history class. Oh my goodness, it was my least favorite class.
Well, I mean, I can imagine I don't know what perspective it was taught from, but maybe that was part of it.
Oh,
yeah.
100%. Now I realize that, you know, that of course I'm not going to be, because it's all like a lot of garbage that's told from, you know, one perspective and not including me or people like me at all.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine like you really had like a fire under you, like fueled from your personal experience to do this documentary and learn and share and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. And when I made it, I was like, oh, it's just going to be for Black women, you know, like, or I'm not that I was holding it to be exclusive for Black men to watch, but I was like, I'm creating this so that we can learn about our history and see and know ourselves in history and have this as a tool for our own self understanding. That's why I made it. And that was my intention. I didn't expect to make any money from the film. Literally, somebody asked me, like someone, this man who was actually very helpful in my, like in my school's film department, who was the film was like an extracurricular project. Mm-hmm. And he was like, are you going to make any money from it? I was like, no. Uh-huh. And then we just kept working. Uh-huh. And I did. And also the first screening that I had, the room was so diverse. Like I was so pleasantly surprised. I never expected that. I didn't think that white people would be interested in our stories. Other races, you know, I didn't think that men would really be that too much interested. Like it was such a diverse room. And that was a pleasant surprise, and it's continued to surprise me how far the film has gone and the audiences that it's reached and who's been interested in it.
Have you gotten feedback? Like, are there any patterns of feedback? Like, say, you know, white women, or have you had? Okay, this is a bumbling question. have you gotten feedback from groups that maybe that you're more critical of, like any like former or Black Panther male, Black Panthers, or like white women involved in the?
Oh, great question.
Women's rights movement.
Not that I can really recall. I mean, of course, you know, there over the years I've done so many screenings, and there's always like the odd scraggler who. Not always, in fact. I mean, it's been like literally like 2% of the population of the audience that I've seen in person. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, I'm sure along the way in the past like decade, there's been like one or two people in the audience who have asked like a sideways question challenging, like, why didn't you put this person in the film? Or I don't think that this is. And it's never, nothing really stands out in my mind, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean... No, I don't know. I also tend to not really harp on that because I feel like there's still like other stories to be told from that time too. And this is just one important one. Yeah. I filled in a gap that there's no other film. If you Google Black women in civil rights film, my film will show up. Mm-hmm. And it's the first of its kind. It was the only of its kind for a long time. And I think it still is.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's what, like nine years old and it's still like actively like being bought and played and in classrooms, or people are using it all over the country. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always going to have that because it's history, because it's timeless, and people are always going to want to learn about our past.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to make some snide comment about like racism is going to be alive and well in America for a while, so your film will always be of interest, I believe.
Yeah. And even if it wasn't like in my lifetime, even if it was like resolved in my lifetime, people would still look back and look at like what happened. I mean, I'm not going to say we don't have slavery in this country, because we absolutely do through the prison industrial complex, but, you know, we don't have it in the same way that we used to. And, but people still are, do you see how many slave movies are coming out? out. I mean, like, people are fascinated. Like, I mean, it's not always like, you know, I think that there is a respectful way to be fascinated with it without sensationalizing it or turning it into like a spectacle. But, you know, and to respect like the survivors of that time. But yeah, like, it's just human history. We're always just seeking to understand ourselves and how far we've come, you know?
Well, I'm really glad that you did this documentary. I hope to see it sometime. It is Reflections Unheard, Black Women and Civil Rights by Nevlyn Nagy. This you're listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. I'm Ruthie Woodring. This is Out There. And Nevlyn's been with me for the hour today. And Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. I'll probably play a little more music. But before I go to music, I should just mention some of the different things that you do. Your memoir called Nevlyn, My Path to Healing and Creative Liberation. Your cat nanny love, in-home cat care, yes, website service.
I can plug it in here.
Yeah, you plug it. Sorry.
If people are interested in the cat sitting and want to check that out, they can check me out at catnannylove.com, which is, I am so pumped about this.
Website.
Check it out. Yep. You can also contact me through there if you're interested in cat sitting services. And as far as my art, you know, with pole dancing, my memoir, other creative practices, fashion design, etc. My name is Nevlyn, N3VLYNNN. If you just type that in, you know, you're going to see my website, nevlyn.com, et cetera, all the platforms. And my film is Reflections Unheard, Black Women and Civil Rights. That one is pretty easy to find. And it's also like, if you just go to Forbes or Smith, you just want to see the film on an off day, check it out. It's available for free to the community.
Fashion design. We didn't get to that.
I'm wearing a shirt. These two shirts. We did. I told you, Ruthie. I told you. I also designed the leotard that I'm wearing on the cover of my book, but I don't have my book with me, so I couldn't show you.
No. Oh. Well, I know when I see you biking around town, or you're always very fashionable.
Oh, thank you. I try. I try to balance, you know, the hard work I have to do on my bike with fashion so I don't get so sweaty.
Well, listeners, you can hear archived editions of Out There, which is the show that you're listening to, from 4 to 5 p.m. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Evidence-based Fridays at 6, followed by Civil Politics at 7. Oh, Election Day is coming up. If Civil Politics will be maybe doing something about that. Maybe it's next week. Maybe they have live coverage on election night. That's what it is. I heard the promo for it before my show came on just now. Thanks for tuning in. There will be Bike Lab tomorrow, Saturday. You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004.
From 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m.
Here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is. Yeah, so that's tomorrow at 11:30 to 2:30. There's a little quiet part in that PSA because it used to be 11 to 2 and I had to make it 11:30 to 2:30. And anyway, so Nevelyn, thank you so much for coming in today. It's great to get to know you a little bit more.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been my pleasure. I love talking about art and cats and life. So thank you so much.
Nevelyn Nagy. And here is some musical requests. Blue Sky, Black Death.